Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Wharton Law School in Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the war on gold when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. This income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. This income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. This income tax requires of us that we sign contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. And then we're taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it just what it is, covetousness and theft in violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Now our God, the God of Israel, gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way with our Constitution in 1787, and that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice a better way of life than income tax and Social Security and the payment of 33% of everything we create and produce to a government. Now if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now be sure to ask for a free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, informative, and free of charge. Tax and status, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we've been talking about gold, the war on gold. This war on gold started back in 1922 in Genoa, Italy. It's orchestrated by the Rockefellers and Windsors and the Vanderbilts and all the rich and the mighty of the world. And hey, it makes all the sense in the world for these people to promote a fiat currency that they have the license to create and spend and take all of our goods and services in exchange for, rather than gold and silver. It makes all the sense in the world. I don't blame them a bit. God, I wish I had the monopoly on making gold. I would rob you 10 times more than they do. I'd be a real pig. I'd make a pig out of myself robbing you if I had that monopoly. I think anybody would like to have a monopoly on making money. Unfortunately, for all of us, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob said, no, I didn't want to buy into that program, and he gave us a law that says, thou shalt not steal. Get out there and work, produce, and take your share, but don't be a pig. And then we came along and said, oh, no, God, you made a mistake. You don't understand international finance. You don't understand economies, stocks, and bonds. And so, therefore, we need to fix your mistake, so we created a Federal Reserve Bank here in the United States. Fairly late in our history, too. You know, we'd gotten along quite nicely without that for the first 125 years, but then we woke up one day and said, oh, my God, we're depriving ourselves of something really valuable here, a Federal Reserve Bank with paper money, so let's get after it. We want paper money like all the nations around us. Well, a fellow by the name of Anthony Sutton writes a book back in 1976, and he said, the declared intent for these new reserve assets and paper debt systems is to reduce the monetary role of gold in the international order. The fallacy is that this claim ignores the truism that arbitrary decrees cannot dictate what is used as money. Demonetization of money by suspending convertibility does not suspend the use of gold, nor does it change the intrinsic qualities of gold. Moreover, gold purchases in the marketplace by the European Central Bank suggest that the demonetization of gold has not been accepted outside the United States. And the 1976 IMF Jamaica Conference, French Finance Minister Floride announced that France would buy IMF gold in order to harmonize the composition of its gold and currency reserves. Fritz Lutweiler, president of the Swiss National Bank, has indicated skepticism about the wisdom and the practicality of expelling gold from the world monetary scene. Lutweiler said Switzerland is not keen on joining this ideological crusade. Underline the word ideological crusade. This new world order is just that. It's the same ideological crusade that we see in Genesis chapter 11, where we wanted to build a tower to heaven. We wanted to unite all of the nations of the world into a one-world government. God said, no, I don't think that's a good plan. So he confounded our languages, scattered us abroad over the face of the earth, introduced nationalism into the equation, and that's the way it's been until the 20th century. And then we woke up one day and said, hey, we need to build another tower. Hey, we need paper money. We need a new world order. And now most of us have bought into that program. So the basic value of gold, therefore, remains, along with constant reminders that gold will be very much acceptable as money when the paper stuff has lost all of its credibility. In 1974, Italy floated a loan from West Germany, backed by gold collateral valued at $120 an ounce. In February of 1976, Portugal borrowed $250 million from German central banks, backed with gold as collateral. Another loan of $50 million from Switzerland was also backed by gold. But note that Italy and Portugal had no alternative. No country, no central banker anywhere will at the moment accept Italian paper lira or Portugal's paper escudos as collateral for a loan. Gold has been and will remain a more than adequate security. In May of 1976, the Great Western United Corporation introduced a gold-silver payment clause in its sugar purchase agreement with the government of Panama. It did so to protect itself against inflation in Panama. It did not want future claims to be paid in worthless paper money, and this contract required a Great Western subsidiary to raise $150 million for the purchase of gold and silver bullion to place in inventory. All right, now notice here that this multinational corporation said, well, we want to have a gold contract. And that's because we don't want to be paid later with depreciated Panamanian pesos. Now, American workers today, they go out into the marketplace and they give their labor. So you give 40 hours of labor at $10 an hour, $400. And then you get $300 of it because your government takes $100 for Social Security and income tax and workman's compensation and a bunch of other taxes. So you get $300 of it, right? Then your government comes along and says, okay, we want you to pay us 7% to spend it. So they want you to pay them another $20, called a sales tax, in order to spend the $300 that you got left over after they taxed you the first $100. So they took $120, left you with $280. Now, you go out into the marketplace and you spend this stuff and find out that between last year and this year, the value of your $280 has depreciated by, guess what, 10%. So they take another $28, $30, which leaves you with $250 worth of purchasing power because the inflation tax took $28 of it. Then it came to you Social Security recipients and said, hey, we're just real big. You should vote Republican in the next election because we're going to give you a cost of living index escalator of 3.5%. So they're going to raise your dollars. You're going to get 3.5% more dollars, boys and girls, that buy 10% less. So you're going to have a net loss of 6.5%. Your standard of living is going down by 6%, but they're going to give you a 4% increase in the number of dollars that you put into your pocket. You know, if we taken leave of our senses, you know, if I came up to you and I said, listen, let me give you a $10 bill. Now, let me take from your $10 bill $4 of it. And then let me tax you another 7% to spend it. Oh, and then by the way, I'm going to show you what a big guy I am. So I'm going to give you a 4% increase, but I'm going to inflate the currency by 10%. So you have a net loss of 6%. Hey, ain't I a big guy? Vote for me. Oh, for crying out loud. Give me a break, would you? This has been going on, you know, not just since George Bush was elected. Hell, Clinton was doing it, and Carter and Reagan and Bush before him, and Tricky Dick and Dwight Eisenhower. Hell, this goes back, you know, to Woodrow Wilson in World War I. This is what's been going on here, kids. Now, it's been institutionalized for nearly 100 years, 90 anyway. Don't you think it's about time that we learned how to add and subtract? I know we're getting into higher mathematics here, but I got to tell you a little story here about higher math. I was talking to a student here the other day, and he mentioned he'd been to school here once before, and he mentioned something about our cats here. Now, I'm a cat lover. I don't know about you guys out there, but I just really love cats. And I've got a special breed of cat. They're called barn cats. Now, most people have Persian cats, or they'll have some exotic breed of cats. Well, I've got a special breed of cat here on the farm. It's called barn cat, B-A-R-N, barn cats. They come in various sizes, various shapes, various colors. And they live out in the barn, and that's why we call them barn cats. You know, if they lived here at the house, we'd call them house cats. So these house cats, they live out at the barn, and And every once in a while, a cow steps on one, kills it. And then every once in a while, an owl comes down and eats one. And, you know, that's called nature and the balance of nature. And I mentioned to this guy, I said, you know, I got too many cats out here. He says, well, what do you do when you get too many cats? I said, well, I go in the house and I get a gun and I come out here and I pour a little milk in the pot over there. And then about 10 or 15 cats gather around the pot and I shoot five of them. And so he mentioned that to a friend of his. He's from the big city. And he mentioned that. And this, there was a lady there. And she just cried. She said, oh, my God, he's cruel. He's wicked. He's inhuman. He kills cats. And I said to myself, well, that girl can't add and subtract. She must have gone to public school. And he kind of laughed a little bit. And he said, yeah, you know, these animal lovers, you know, they don't like it when you kill cats and dogs. And they got these special things. I see it on TV. And every once in a while, they'll have on the 6 o'clock news, and they'll show a picture of a cat or a dog. And they say, well, the Springfield SPCA has a little Rover over here. And little Rover over here is up for adoption, and for $75 or $150, you know, you can buy a little Rover. Hell, I can shoot little Rover for a nickel. You know, if you got too many dogs and too many cats and don't know what to do with them, you know, it costs you about a nickel to shoot them or less. And then somebody, they get real upset and they say, oh, oh my God, you know, but you just can't kill these dogs and cats. You know, we have to find homes for them. And so these people are out here trying to find homes for all these cats and all these dogs and one thing and another. And I said, you know, these people are suffering from the terminal stupids. They can't count. They go to public school. They get out of public school, and they're afflicted with the terminal stupids. I had that same problem. So don't feel bad about that. Hell, I couldn't count until I was 37. 37 years old. And I'm still a recovering public school kid. You know, I have never recovered from the affliction of being institutionalized. I was institutionalized, you know, for 12 years. My parents, you know, they could see that I was an imbecile, so they sent me off to public school for 12 years, institutionalized me, made me even dumber than what I was when I started out. Couldn't count until I was 37. But listen, get your pen and paper out here, kids. I'm going to show you how to count these barn cats. Now, if you take a pair of cats, and this will be good for you for figuring the economy. This will be good for you for figuring fiat paper money and gold and silver coin and the difference between the two. So now don't think now that I'm trying to digress here for a minute. I'm going to show you the cat story over here. So now people, they look at me and they say, Gordon over there, he's shooting cats. Girls and boys, I love cats. I pet them, you know. But when I shoot them, you know, sometimes the ones that I was petting yesterday get shot, and then they're dead. But I got to do that, and I got to do that because if you get too many cats, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, then they're eating out of house and home. Cats multiply like rats. And you know, you can't have just millions and billions of rats running around now, can you? Well, you just can't have millions and billions of cats running around. Somebody says, well, you got to find a home for them all. Okay, so let's figure out how we're going to find a home for all these cats. You take a pair of cats, just any run-of-the-mill pair of cats, but you got to have a boy cat and a girl cat to do this now. Two girl cats won't work and two boy cats. You got to have a boy and a girl. You take these two cats, a boy and a girl, and you just put them together. And leave them alone. They'll figure out what to do from there on. And these two cats are gonna breed, see, and they're gonna multiply. Cats do that. I learned it on Nature. I watch PBS regularly. And these two cats. Now, you ever wonder how many kittens does a cat have when she has a litter? And the answer is 6. She's got 12 kits, but she can have 6 pretty regular. And how many times a year can this cat have this litter of 6? And the answer is 4 times a year. Sometimes more than that, but they can do 4 times a year standing on their heads. Now that's 24 baby kittens a year. Out of one pair of barn cats. I can't speak for these Persians and these exotic breeds. I'm just talking about these everyday, ordinary, garden variety barn cats, you know, the ones I got out here in my barn. And these two barn cats, they breed 4 times a year, and they'll have 24 kittens. Now, I went to public school, but I overcame that, and I figured out the percentage of increase, and that's 1,200%. It's actually 1,300%, but I rounded it off in case one of them died. I had a little yellow one out here the other day. Cats normally have 9 lives. You ever heard that? Cats have 9 lives. I got a little orange one out there. She's only got 6.5 lives. And that's because Alfalfa, when she backed out of the stanchion, and stepped on this little cat. And I thought that was the end of that little cat over there, that nature had taken its course. And the little cat just screamed and yelled and cried and clawed and just screeched something terrible, awful. And when the cow walked out of the barn, of course, she took her hoof off this cat. And the little cat, I thought, well, that cat's done in. The cat run off and kind of limping and crippled off, you know. I hadn't seen him for 4 or 5 days, but the other day I went out there and I saw that little cat named Sunshine. I know the cat's name is Sunshine because that's what the little girl named it, Sunshine. Got Alfalfa the cow, stepped on Sunshine the kitten, and Sunshine is now down to 6.5 lives. She better not get underneath that cow anymore. She's running a great risk. So there's that story. Now 1,200% increase is a very conservative increase for a pair of barn cats. That's 1,200% per year. So you take two cats and you start breeding them in January, and about March you'll have a litter, and about, you know, then about June you'll have a litter, and then about September you'll have a litter, and then about December you'll have a litter, and then, you know, this just goes on and on, around and around and around. That's 24 kittens. 6 times 4 is 24 kittens, plus 2 cats equals 26 cats at the end of 1 year. That's a 1,200% increase. Now I would have two cats to start with. At the end of the year, I got 26. You see what my problem is, kids? Now somebody says, well, you got to go find a home for those kittens. But if I don't find a home for those kittens, and those 26 cats, you know, about half of them will be boys and about half of them will be girls, and those 24 kittens, they reach maturity in about 1 year, and then in the second year, they start breeding and having babies, and at the end of the second year, I got 312 cats. Now, I just want to point out to you that 10 cats sitting around a pot will drink about 1 gallon of milk. I know, because I'm milking a milk cow, and then I got a fresh cow, and I got a couple of strippers out there, and I'm just telling you that when I get through, I love cats, and I pour a little milk out for the cats, you know, every milk, and I pour a little out, and the cats, they just come a flocking in, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got two cats, and then pretty soon you got 6 or 8 cats, and then pretty soon you got 26. Well, if you take those 26 cats, and you just let nature take its course, at the end of the second year, you're going to have 312 cats, and that's going to take 31 gallons of milk a day to feed them. I mean, you know, we're going from a gallon to 31 gallons in just 1 year, but it gets worse than that. You see, at the end of the third year, those 312 cats, you know, just let nature take its course, and they'll multiply to 3,744 cats. That'd take 374 gallons of milk to feed those cats. And then at the end of the fourth year, it's 44,928. My God, that's 449 gallons of milk. And no, it's worse than that. Divide that by 10. My God, that's 4,492 gallons of milk. And then, you know, at the end of the fifth year, it's a half a million cats. At the end of the sixth year, it's 6 million cats. At the end of the seventh year, it's 77 million cats. At the end of the eighth year, it's 931 million cats. At the end of the ninth year, it's 1,123,524,096 cats. I know, I counted them all. And then using my famous Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instrument computer with the GT function, I multiplied 1,123,524,096 times 12, and it just went dead on me. The calculator couldn't handle the number. Had to go back to public school training and do the numbers by hand. It's 13,482,289,152 barn cats, and to figure out how much milk they're going to drink every day at every milker is higher mathematics beyond my calculating capacity. And on the third day, God created cats, but on the fourth day, God created owls. And thank God we've got owls and coyotes and buzzards and bullets. And then because with bullets we can keep those cats in check. And that's what you have to do, children. You got to keep them in check. Now, of course, we're in the same dilemma here with the gold problem. And you're wondering, what in the hell do cats have to do with gold? Well, it has to do with geometric progression. Geometric progression. Now, listen up. You see, when FDR started this program back in 1933, he took the gold away from us. See? He said, this gold is a barbaric relic, and I'm going to save you from it. Thank God for Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, Franklin saved us from this barbaric relic called gold, and he gave us Federal Reserve note dollars. And he starts off with Social Security, for instance, in 1935. And he says, you know, this gold thing over here can't handle Social Security because there's not enough of it. And he's right. Ain't no way in hell you can have a Social Security system with gold, gold coin. And that's because this thing grows geometrically. So in 1935, Mr. Roosevelt starts Social Security. He's got paper. Now, we can fund this thing with paper. No problem. Can't fund it with gold. So in 1940, the first lady, I forgot her name now, she's a pretty famous lady, she collected her first check. I think her first check was $80 or $80 a year or whatever it is. And the first lady in 1940, she collects the first check from Social Security. Now, there are millions and millions of people paying into Social Security. And one person drawing out. And that's the beauty of this geometric progression. God, it just works like a shot when you got millions paying in and only one guy at the top. It works that way today. Millions of people pay into Exxon, and one guy at the top draws $435 million a year. It's a hell of a neat program for that one guy at the top. I wish I was that one guy at the top. Okay, 1945 comes along. Now there are more people drawing out. And the number of people paying in was 80 to 1. That's 80 people paying in for everybody drawing out in 1940. And then in 1945, it drops to 45 to 1. By 1957, it drops to 16 to 1. By 1986, it was down to 1996, it was down to 3.2 to 1. Today, it's down to 2 to 1. And in 2020, the number will be 1 to 1. That is, for everybody paying in, there'll be one guy drawing out in 14 more years. And then it goes the other direction. Watch how this works. Sometime after 2020, when there's one guy paying in for every one guy drawing out, pretty soon there will be one guy paying in, and two guys drawing out, and then one guy paying in, and four guys drawing out, and then one guy paying in, and eight guys drawing out, and then one guy paying in, and 16 people drawing out, and at some point in time, I don't know when this is going to happen, but at some point in time, it will be physically impossible for one guy, one man, to physically support 16, 32, 64, or 128 other people. I don't know how many people I can support by myself, and I don't want to find out. I know that I can support myself, and I suspect that I could probably support myself and you. I could probably support myself and you and your wife, maybe even support myself and you, your wife, and three bread snappers. Maybe if I really put my mind to it, I could support myself, you, your wife, three bread snappers, and maybe a couple of in-laws. You know, but at some point in time, children, an old man like me is going to get to the point where there's just simply not enough physical energy in this old body to support all you people. Can you understand that? It's nothing personal. That's where I'm at with the cats. God, I love cats. But you know, I've only got four cows milking, and they only produce 7 gallons a day. I got one cow milking, and I got one cow fresh, and two strippers, and that's 7 gallons. And you know, kids, by the time we get up to 312 cats and 10 cats suck up a gallon, that's 31 gallons of milk. My God, kids, I'd have to put on another 5 or 6 cows just to feed 312. And then the following year, 3,744 cats. Can you see that an old man like me, I can't feed all those cats? Now somebody says, well, you should get them all spayed then. Well, okay, I hear you. But you know, by the time these two cats have 24 kittens, and I take those 13 kittens in, you know, that's the females and the 13 males in, told Detweiler in here to have them spayed at $25 each. Let's just figure what that's going to cost. 24 kittens times $25. It's going to cost me $600 to have those first 26 spayed. Somebody says, well, Jesus, if you would have spayed those first two cats, you wouldn't have had the 24 kittens. Well, children, that isn't going to work either, because I need those kittens. See, the reason I love cats is because they catch mice, and because they're kind of friendly, and because I kind of like to pet them, and I kind of like them. And if, you know, if we neutered every cat in the world, you know, pretty soon they'd become extinct, wouldn't they? So, I mean, we've got to have some of them out there breeding. My point is, the reason we have bullets and coyotes and owls is to keep those cats in check. It's the natural balance. And when the owls and the coyotes don't keep up with the natural balance, then old George goes out there with a gun, and I bring the balance back into equilibrium with the amount that I can afford to feed, which is about a gallon of milk a day. Now, I'm doing my part. I'm feeding my cats 365 gallons of milk a year. And my cats all drink organic milk with no dyes or sprays or chemicals. And that's better milk than you people in the city drink. It's worth $5 a gallon. How much is that? It's 365 times 5. Hey, I'm already spending $1,825 a year feeding cats. Now, I think I'm doing my part to the cat population as a cat lover. I take good care of my two cats out there, and I let them multiply to about 10, but I keep them below 26. When I get up to about 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, something like that, I go out there and thin out the population and bring it back into equilibrium again. All right, so I just thought I'd share that with you now. Some of you are sitting there a little confused, saying, what in the hell has this got to do with gold? Well, that's what fiat paper money does, you see. The fiat paper money gives the politician the power and the money that he needs to buy your vote. But little by little, over a long period of time, this fiat paper money grows. And that's because it's lent into circulation, and there's a debt, and the debt has an interest rate, and the interest rate compounds. And as this interest rate compounds, here's what happens. We start with a debt near zero in 1930. I think it was $2 billion. By the end of World War II, it's up to $257 billion. And today, the debt is up to $8 trillion, and it's growing at the rate of about $1 trillion every 2 or 3 years. Now, that's what they admit to. Now, they lie a lot. Those politicians suffer from the terminal liars, and so they lie a lot. It's really a lot more than that. Our balance of payments deficit for 2006 is around $800 billion. And there's an interest number that goes with that. And then our national debt, it costs us about $300 billion a year to service that debt. So it grows by about, you know, $300 billion, you know. When you get to $1,000 billion, every 3 years, that turns into another trillion. And you see where we're going here? And pretty soon, this thing just continues to grow, just like those cats. It goes 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, and it don't take very, very, very long now until that turns into some real money. In fact, it has already turned into some real money. It's turned into more money than we can ever pay back. Now get this. If you were to take all of the gold that's ever been mined on planet Earth at $500 an ounce, it would equal approximately $2 trillion. $2 trillion. Now, the American economy is about $11 trillion a year. Can you say trillion, boys and girls? Can you say 11 trillion? You see, all the gold that's ever been mined on planet Earth to this moment in time equals about 20% of just America's gross domestic product. That doesn't count any gold for any of the rest of you people in the world. Got that? Okay. Now, the reason we can do that is because we have this fantastic money machine called paper or now we've got electronic entries, and we can just create this. But unfortunately, we cannot create gold, we cannot create big screen TVs, and we can't create tennis shoes by just snapping our fingers and hitting the electronic key and creating them. We can do that with money, but we can't do that with goods. That's our Achilles heel, just like those cats. And that's why it would be a good idea if we kept the monetary and the production system in balance. And it's not in balance now, and this imbalance is going to come back and bite us in the ass. That's the moral to the story in this book. And let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide 7 days a week around the world on the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and our archive, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. And you do that by calling the law school and asking for it. And the number to call is 417-273-4967. Simple enough. Just dial this number in or poke it in, whichever you got there, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program, we believe to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, or the management or staff of this radio network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the War on Gold, written by Anthony Sutton back in 1976. I don't think you can get this book at Amazon.com. I don't know how many copies they printed when they first printed this back in 76, but I don't think it ever made the bestsellers list on the New York Times. I imagine they probably made 10 or 20,000 copies of it, and they're probably scattered around the world, and you can probably get a copy of it. I recommend it. It's a dynamite book, dynamite book. And it's not just about ancient history. It's about a prognosis for the future. I mean, there isn't anything this guy said in 76 that wasn't true or come to pass in 79 to 80, 81. And there isn't anything in here that isn't applicable to today, 2006. Now, in this chapter, this is the last chapter of the book. Remember, we read the last chapter and then we go to the first chapter. Okay, this is the story about South Africa. And he said, now, South Africa has to be destroyed. Can you believe it? South Africa has to be destroyed. And he describes it kind of like this. He says, the Soviet Union has been reduced to the role of a technical captive. No doubt it is restive at times, but Henry Kissinger, to the contrary, it is ultimately dependent on the West for technology. So at the moment, Wall Street permits the Soviet Union to expand its influence around the world. No doubt because Marxist states provide the Wall Street internationalists with very lucrative, non-competitive markets. A dependent dictatorship is a safe customer for Wall Street. Now, after South Africa, Western Europe is next in line to succumb to Marxist totalitarian rule. If this occurs, it would place most of the world in technical and financial subservience to the Wall Street establishment because very few Marxist state is, or every new Marxist state, I should say, is a guaranteed customer for American technology. Did you catch that? Did you catch that, kids? What we're looking for here is a captive customer, like South Africa, like China, like Russia. Now, you need to understand here, kids, that the blueprint, the plan for the New World Order is to annihilate, to kill, to destroy, to practice genocide upon, to terminate every black person on planet Earth. I just wanted to let you black people out there know that there is a movement afoot. And if they succeed in their goal in 50 years, now they set about a 50-year time schedule, they're looking at 2050 to 2060. there will be no black people drawing breath on planet Earth. Now, for some reason, God, that is the creator, you know, this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob way, way, way back, somehow or another, he figured out that black people weren't as bad as we today have figured out that they are. And so he created these black people for whatever reason, you know. Now, of course, these evolution guys, they come along and they say, oh, no, no, this is just a miracle of random selection. Random selection. So there's a second plan afoot here, and they want to do away with all of you Oriental people also. So when this game is finally played out, 50 or 60 years from now, if they're successful in their aims and their goals, there will be no more Asians, there will be no more blacks. Well, then I guess that only leaves us whites left. That's good news for us guys. Well, it ain't exactly the best news in the world, because they got a plan afoot for us white guys too, and they're going to reduce our population by 90%. They plan on keeping alive about 500 million, according to the runestones down in Georgia, about 500 million. So they're going to take about 6.5 billion people, that's about where we're at today, and they're going to reduce that by about 6 billion. Now, if you take a look at Revelation chapter 6, and then you take a look at Isaiah 6, verse 13, that's just about the same numbers that God placed on them. In Isaiah 6, verse 13, God says, I'm going to save a tithe of you alive. Now, the internationalists, they work it the other direction. See, they say, we're going to kill 6 billion. God says, well, I'm going to save about 10% of you alive. God, I think, is a better plan, because I think he plans on keeping 10% of everybody alive, and the internationalists plan on keeping 10% of the world's population alive, but they plan on keeping only the whites, and the blacks and Orientals have to go. Sorry, no hard feelings. It's just central planning of the socialist welfare state. And they have decided that that's what's best for us. I don't care much for the plan. I don't care much for that plan at all. And so if you're one of those, I just thought that I'd share that with you and let you know that that's what's coming. And then the book of Revelation isn't a very pleasant book. And so for you Christians out there, I don't want to spoil your day or rain on your parade, but I thought I'd let you know that there's some tough times coming. Well, there's tough times coming on all us guys except for all of you rapturists out there. Now you guys that are going to be raptured off are okay. You guys don't have a problem. To us non-rapturist guys out here, we have a problem. We got a real bad problem. And so I thought I'd share that with you a little bit here, because this gold thing also bears upon the world as we know it and the world as it's going to become. And that's because economics plays a very vital role in the welfare and the happiness and the success, not to mention the food, clothing, and shelter that all of us need to survive. Now, God came along and he said, now I want you people to use just weights and balances, and I want you to stop stealing, and I want you to follow my economic laws. There's 15 of these economic laws. We woke up one day and said, oh, no. Now, we're not interested in property. We're interested in profit, and so we're going to get into stocks and bonds and all this good stuff. And the world's food supply, now, I don't know if you knew this, but in 1970, the world food supply, 1970, was about 70 days. Not exactly a cornucopia that's bubbling over and leaking at the seams. 70 days. Or 73 days. Maybe it's 73. But today it's down to less than 38 days. Did you know that? Less than 38 days. Let me flip a page or two. In the 1970s. I thought I had that number right in front of me. Well, 70 days, close enough. And we're down to 38 days now today. Now, boys and girls, we Americans have about a three-day food supply. Did you know that? Just take a look. How much food do you have stocked up right now? How long can you live without going to the supermarket? Well, on average, if you're the average Joe Sixpack American, you've got 3 days in your refrigerator, and that's about it, 3 days. Now, some of you might have a week, and that'd be a seven-day supply. If you're a real right-wing, redneck, radical fanatic, you might even have 30-day supply, 30 days. In fact, I just viewed a subsistence and survival film dealing with nuclear fallout, and they suggested in a real wild scenario that you people get really, really conservative and stock up a 30-day supply, 30 whole days. When you contrast that to what the Bible talks about that we learn from their examples in the past, and Joseph stocked up a 7-year supply, and you compare that to 30 days, you know, kids, we're talking about inconvenience here at 30 days. 3 days is not worth talking about. Because they say FEMA and the government will come in with their help. Didn't we learn anything about FEMA and the government help in New Orleans? I mean, if you people want to depend on FEMA to come in here and save your bacon, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but I'm not going to depend on FEMA. And these guys now have this paper money thing down, you know, down pretty well. And there's a prophecy over here in Revelation 13:16. Jot this down. And this fits right in with Anthony Seton and the war on gold, because the plan calls for a cashless society. Did you know that? Cashless. Now, what they plan to do is this. They're going to give you a little chip. They got these devices now. This little chip, about the size of a grain of rice. You can put it in your right hand. And it will contain all of the information, all the vital information about you. It'll have all of your financial transactions. It'll have your balance sheet. It'll have your vital statistics, you know, like your height, weight, and shape, and form, and all that. And that'll be your worldwide, your national, worldwide identifier, driver's license. I mean, hell, this thing will just contain everything. One little chip, size of a grain of rice. And they're going to put two of them in you, one in your right hand, one in your forehead. It'll be the greatest thing since sliced white bread. You can go into the supermarket, and you know, when you go to checkout, you know, today you got to swipe your card. In the future, you'll just swipe your hand right over the scanner, just like they do the groceries. They'll run all the groceries over the scanner. You just swipe your hand over the scanner and walk out. Isn't that neat? And then God, you know, old stodgy curmudgeon that he is, calls that the mark of the beast. And he says, all of you people that accept that mark, that chip in your hands, he says he's going to kill you. Shows you how kind and gentle that guy is, that God is. He ain't very kind and gentle. He's going to kill you because you got the mark of the beast. Then you got George Bush and the Republicans telling you, if you don't have this mark of the beast, then you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade. Kind of reminds me of World War II. Or maybe it's more like Sam's today. Just try it. Just walk into Sam's. Sam's, you know, that's Walmart's, the super exclusive store. You walk in there, you got to have a card to shop there. You can't check out without it. Isn't that just special? You won't be able to get into a store. You won't be able to buy a gallon of gas. I remember one time I was up in Medford, Oregon, I believe it was, Medford or Grants Pass, and filled up my car with gas. And I went to pay this guy. I handed him a $50 bill. He looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids. And he pointed to the sign. He said, credit card only. I said, okay, I'll give you the exact change. He said, we don't take money here. Credit cards only. Credit card. So they don't take money in some stations. I mean, at least at that time. And so here comes your cashless society. You got that? And if you don't have the right marks, bells, and whistles, you're not going to buy, sell, or trade. Fortunately for me, I had a guy there with bells and whistles, and so he gave him his credit card, and then I paid that guy. But the moral to the story is that only paper money works like that. Gold doesn't work that way. See, with gold, we have property and private transactions. Now, fortunately, we have a dual monetary system here in the United States. We have the Treasury monetary system of gold and silver coin working right now today in 2006. For all those of you that never heard of such a thing, we have gold and silver coin denominated in 50, 25, 10, and $5 gold pieces with $1 denominated silver dollars. And then we have our paper money system that comes out of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks called Federal Reserve Notes. And they deal in credit cards and checks and Federal Reserve Notes and things like that. So for all of you people out there that want to deal in gold and silver, it's available. It's available. Now, of course, most of you wouldn't know what to do with it or how to spend it or how to use it. And that's why we have a business school that we call the business school. And that's because we deal with business. Can you see the logic behind that? Business school. We deal in business. And we teach people the crazy business techniques of dealing with gold and silver coin. How do you deal with gold and silver coin when you want to buy from Walmart and Exxon and Standard Oil and all of these multinational corporations and Joe Sixpack, Sally Housewife? How do you function in the real world with gold and silver coin? I do. I don't have any problem. I don't have a bank account, a credit card, a social security number, or a marriage license. I don't have any problems in life. I'm happy as a clam at high tide. My great-granddad, in 1900, he didn't have a social security number, a bank account. He was dealing in gold and silver coin. He was buying, selling, and trading. He was as happy as a clam at high tide. Somewhere between 1900 and 2006, we got into the habit of using credit cards, commercial paper, checks, negotiable instruments, online payments. You know, and we're unable to function out here in the real world of gold and silver. We're able to function in the real world of commercial paper. I call that Alice in Wonderland. Alice in Wonderland. That's money with no backing, no intrinsic value, and lacks all of the characteristics that are needed for a store of value or for real money. People call it money. In fact, when you say, would you prefer to be paid in gold, silver, or Federal Reserve notes? They look at you and they say, I want real money. Real money. I ask them sometimes, what do you call gold? And they'll look at you and sneer and say, what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? Oh, I see. You know, when you got people that don't know what to do with gold and silver, it makes all the sense in the world for those people to deal in paper. Well, let's let them deal in paper. I said before, I'm not here to free the slaves. Who's going to do the work? Let them work. Let them pay tax. Let the guy work for $10 an hour for 40 hours and then let his masters pay him $300. I don't care. When I work for 40 hours for $10 an hour, I want $400. Can you add that up? 10 times 40, 400. It's not 300, it's 400. I don't want to take a hit with 7% sales tax and 10% inflation on top of that. I don't want to pay that, and I don't. And I don't think you should, but you know, if that's what you want to do, then get after it. Now, Anthony Sutton, back in 76, let me tell you about this book again. He writes this book, it's called The War on Gold. There are some people out there that don't like gold, and they don't want you to have gold, and they think gold is bad for you, and they know it's bad for them. And there's another guy over here, we call this guy God. We call him Elohim, or Yahweh, or Yahshua, or, you know, whatever, Jesus, or sweet Jesus, or, you know, whatever this name you got to hang on, this God. He said, hey, listen, I got a plan over here. It's called the Ten Commandments. It says, thou shalt not steal. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Don't use unjust weights and balances. Have a just weight. Have a just measure. Be honest. Crazy lunatic. And then his plan calls for using gold and silver. And he says, hey, listen, I got this neat plan. It's called gold and silver coin. Our founding fathers created our Constitution. And at Article 1, Section 10, they put that right in our Constitution. It says, no state shall use anything but gold or silver coin as a tender and payment of debt. And then they followed it up with the Coinage Act of 1792. We followed that plan and principle until 1913. How we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world in 100 years. So did the Roman Empire and the Egyptians and the Greeks and everybody else. Everybody who has ever used gold and silver coin as the basis of their monetary system has become a world-ruling empire. You could take Granada, and if they would go to gold and silver, use it faithfully, Granada would at some point in time become the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous, military, economic, and industrial power in the world by using gold and silver. Hell, you Germans can do it. You Portuguese can do it. You Argentines can do it. Anybody can do it. Hell, you North Koreans could do it and do it faster than with nuclear weapons. But they're not very likely to do that because they would have to give up political power. And that's why we have paper money, because that's what gives your masters political power over you. Hey, let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Keep in mind now that the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and then all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, reviewing the book The War on Gold by Anthony Sutton. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.